Hello, I'm Dango Rose, and you're listening to the Mountaineer Podcast in conjunction with the Mountaineer Newspaper, the voice of the Peak to Peak, online and in print. Brought to you by Mountain Vale Media. Now, listen in for the show.
This is the Mountain Ear Podcast, and I'm Marianne Rosen, bringing you stories, history, or lore from or about the mountains you live in. March is Women's History Month. Stories of Colorado women from the past and present abound. But the six whose chronicles will be told in this two-part series led extremely fascinating and/or prodigious lives. The narratives carry themes of overcoming hardships, slavery, careers, non-adherence to societal norms, scandal, philanthropy, influencing the historical course of the state, and even murder. These tales are made even more interesting because each of these women has a connection in some way to right here in the Peak to Peak area. Beginning part one this week with an incredible woman who made her mark as Colorado Gold Rush's first black female settler. An entrepreneur, abolitionist, cook, laundress, midwife, nursemaid, and real estate investor, Clara Brown was born circa 1800 in Virginia. Clara was a slave owned by tobacco farmer Ambrose Smith in that state. She worked the fields, married Richard, another slave, and had three daughters, one of whom died as a child, and a son. When Ambrose Smith passed away in 1835, Clara and her family were sold at auction to different people, and her family was torn apart. Clara herself ended up in Kentucky with plantation and slave owner George Brown. Upon his death, his will stipulated that Clara be freed. She was, however, required by law to leave the state. She wound up in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, where she joined a wagon train heading west, working as a laundress and cook, first for a family, and then for Colonel Benjamin Wadsworth. It was an arduous journey, made even more difficult by some blatant racism. Arriving in Denver, she worked in a bakery and as a laundress. Through her affiliation with two Methodist missionaries whom she met in the city, she helped to found the non-denominational Union Sunday School. Following miners into the mountains, Brown settled in Gregory Gulch, now called Central City. She is believed to be Colorado Gold Rush's first African-American female settler. In Central City, Clara opened the first laundry in Gilpin County and began a business making and selling meals to settlers. She also worked as a midwife. With a partner, Brown expanded her laundry businesses. When laundering clothes, she would collect the gold dust from the miners' pockets. With the funds from her business, which she saved, and with a little help from the gold dust, Clara invested in mine claims and land. As she netted more funds, she made additional purchases. It was believed that Brown eventually owned 16 lots in Denver, 7 houses in Central City, and property and mines in Boulder, Georgetown, and Idaho Springs. Brown was a generous and kind-hearted woman who used her profits and funds to help anyone in need, whether they were African American, Euro-American settlers, or Native Americans. She turned no one away. Brown earned the nickname Angel of the Rockies, and her home became a hospital and a refuge for those sick or in poverty. Another nickname she garnered was that of Aunt Clara because of her emotional and financial support of others. Clara Brown, though not Catholic, donated to the construction of the Catholic Church in Central City. She held Methodist church services in her house and gave large sums of money toward the construction of the first Protestant church in the area, St. James. With some of her funds, along with letters written with the aid of friends, Clara eventually attempted to locate her immediate family. At the end of the Civil War, when she could move around the country freely, Clara liquidated some of her holdings and went in search. After a few failed endeavors, she finally discovered that, sadly, her husband and one daughter had died. Unfortunately, her son had been sold so many times that it was impossible to locate him. Brown did, however, joyfully reconnect with her other daughter and a granddaughter. In her travels, while striving to track down immediate family, Brown did find other relatives, and with her own funds and the approval of Governor Pitkin and the state of Colorado, she assisted them and some others in getting to Colorado, settling down, and finding jobs. In 1879, at approximately 79 years of age, Brown traveled to Kansas as an official representative of the governor. There, she aided former slaves in building a community and farming the land. Despite suffering devastating losses of her own due to fires in Central City and floods in Denver, she never stopped helping others. Clara Brown depleted all of her savings in being of service to others, donating to Central City and finding her family. That, along with the aforementioned losses, left Clara Brown destitute. The community she had always been there for now rallied to come to her aid. When Brown could no longer live in the higher altitude, she moved to Denver to live with a friend. Brown died in 1885, and the Society of Colorado Pioneers buried her with honors in Riverside Cemetery. Colorado dignitaries, including the mayor of Denver and Governor James Benton Grant, attended. In the same year as her death, Brown was voted into the Society of Colorado Pioneers. In 1989, Clara was inducted into the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame, and in 2022, into the Colorado Business Hall of Fame. There's a plaque inscribed to her in St. James Methodist Church, and a stained glass window in her honor can be found in the Colorado State Capitol. The Central City Opera House dedicated a permanent memorial chair in Clara Brown's name, and her life is the subject of Henry Mollicone and William Luce's opera, Gabriel's Daughter, which premiered at the Opera House in 2003. Clara Brown is considered one of the 100 most influential women in the history of Colorado. Another saga of an amazing woman is one with an incredible connection to the state and of a woman who had a major influence on education in Colorado. It is, however, her final chapter that provides her fascinating but sad tragic link to the Peak to Peak area. Emily Griffith was born in 1868 in Ohio. After the economy in the state plummeted, her family moved to Nebraska to try their hand at farming. Griffith's family was poor, and she was forced to leave school in the eighth grade in order to help care for them. When farming did not work out, her sister Florence in poor health, and her mom and dad declining, Emily needed to work. At 16 years old, she pursued her goal of becoming a teacher. Because of her age, it took a while for her to find a job. Once she began teaching, she would live with her students' families in order to save money. In doing this, she realized that most of the parents had little to no education, precluding them from getting ahead, and so she began tutoring them as well and teaching adults to read. Griffith, with only an eighth grade education herself, stayed up long nights studying and self-taught herself many subjects. In 1894, after an especially difficult winter destroyed the very few crops that Emily's family had, the family moved to Denver. Now 27, Griffith applied for teaching positions, saying she was a teen, due to the fact that she was not married. Emily, bucking the norm, never wanted to marry, as she saw it as a distraction to her career and the care of her family, especially her sister Florence. Society, however, dictated that at her age, she should be married, and the fact that she was not could be held against her when looking for a teaching job. Although she had 11 years of teaching experience, in Denver she needed to begin again at the bottom. It did not take her long, however, to rise to the top. She finally landed a position as an 8th grade teacher at the 24th Street School in the Five Point section of Denver, home to primarily African Americans, but also to Hispanic, Jewish, and Asian populations. As she had done in Nebraska, Griffith tutored her students' parents and also began teaching English to immigrants. Griffith saw the need for adult education in academic areas, but also in practical courses and job training. Emily believed that everyone deserved an education regardless of age, race, gender, or background. Ahead of her time, she was known to adapt her teaching methods to her pupils' needs. By 1904, Griffith became the Denver Deputy State Superintendent of Schools, where she remained for 5 years. Emily missed the classroom, however, so returned to teaching. After only 1 year, she was offered a position as Deputy State Superintendent of Instruction. The job would give her the ability to change the way students were taught throughout all of Colorado. Griffith could not resist and jumped at the chance. She held the position for 3 years before once again returning to teaching. At this same time, Emily began holding formal evening classes for adults, offering courses in practical subjects such as cooking and sewing, along with classes such as English and reading. She decided it was time to make her dream of a full-time school for adults a reality. Using her connections and raising funds, she put forth her idea for a school to train skilled and productive workers and provide life skill courses as well as some academic ones. After rehabbing an old school building, the Opportunity School in Denver opened in September 1916. The school's motto was, "For all those who wish to learn." Its success that very first year was unexpected. It was presumed that around 200 students would apply, but 1,400 did in that very first week. Open 13 hours a day with no tuition or fees, the school offered courses in electricity, masonry, bookkeeping, hairstyling, dressmaking, and nursing, to name a few. During World War I, classes like communications, radio, and airplane maintenance were added. The school worked with local businesses and trained students for very specific jobs. Students who needed it were fed by Emily's sister Florence and her mother, and the Opportunity School coordinated with charitable organizations and social workers to provide services to students. When Griffith retired in 1933, the Opportunity School had seen over 1 million graduates, and in 1934, the school was renamed the Emily Griffith Opportunity School. It still operates to this day as the Emily Griffith Technical College, though with some low tuition costs now, and also acts as an alternative high school for the Denver public school system. In addition to the school, Griffith opened a home for homeless boys, which operates currently as the Griffith Center for Children. Emily believed that every person had worth and dignity and deserved to be treated with respect. It was, however, upon retirement that her connection to the Peak to Peak began. After ending her career, Emily and her sister Florence moved to a cabin in Pine Cliff outside of Nederland and 20 miles from Central City. She spent her retirement quietly, hiking the Peak to Peak area, reading, and having friends over in the evening. The cabin Emily lived in was built by Fred Lundy, a retired teacher from the Opportunity School with whom she had become friends. Lundy also ran errands for the sisters and chopped wood for them. He was often a dinner guest. In 1947, Emily and Florence's sister Ethel, who lived close by, came to visit. However, there was no answer. Ethel assumed her sisters were out walking in the forest and left. When she did not hear from them the following day, she became worried. Ethel and her husband broke into the cabin where both Emily and Florence were found murdered, having been shot. There was no sign of a struggle, and the table was set for three people. Inhabitants of the area were horrified to learn of Emily and her sister's death. They could not believe that a peaceful life had ended so violently. Police suspected Fred Lundy, as he had access to the cabin, his car was nearby with a large stash of cash inside, and he was missing. A nationwide search for Lundy turned up empty until his body was found in nearby South Boulder Creek and was ruled a suicide by drowning. With no real known motive, no actual clues, and Lundy's involvement never proven, the crime has never been solved. Residents in the area held several theories. Some speculated that Lundy was guilty and that he committed the murders because the sisters had become a burden to him, or because he was a thwarted suitor, or that it was a mercy killing because Emily feared that she would die before Florence. Others surmised that Ethel and her husband killed the sisters in order to collect a large life insurance payout. There were still others who feared that a random killer had done it. Griffith was buried in Fairmount Cemetery and flags flew at half-mast. In 1976, a stained glass portrait of Emily was hung in the state capitol, and in 1985, she became a member of the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame. Also in 1985, the Emily Griffith High School was founded to give those who had dropped out of high school as teens a chance to earn a diploma as adults. Emily Griffith was a visionary educator whose life ended tragically. This week's final tale of a legendary Colorado woman linked to our area is that of Hannah Connell Barker. A teacher, civic leader, businesswoman, and land developer during a time when women were not always recognized for their contributions. Born Hannah Connell in Ireland in 1844, she emigrated from there to Massachusetts at age 8. After spending time in Massachusetts and Iowa, she crossed the Great Plains in a covered wagon with two other immigrants, Mary Davidson, her lifelong friend, and her husband, Will Davidson. They ended up in Boulder County. Somewhere along the line, she obtained a college education, and at age 23, in 1867, she settled in Ward. Hannah taught school in a saloon to the children of miners working in the area, who did not always have a favorable view of book learning. In 1869, she moved to Boulder and taught in the Boulder Valley School District. She married local businessman Ezra Barker and gave up teaching. Her husband died 6 years later and left her most of his real estate holdings, including a ranch in Boulder Canyon near Nederland. In the 1880s, Mrs. Barker worked on several business endeavors. In 1884, Hannah purchased real estate adjacent to Boulder, herself platting the town of Highland Lawn, which was annexed by Boulder in 1891. She formed Boulder Creamery in 1887 and was also appointed to the board of directors of the Boulder Bank. Connell Barker was involved in many civic causes. She founded the Boulder Women's Club and the Ladies Literary Society, free public reading rooms, and the Fortnightly Club. The clubs she formed and chaired carried out civic projects, such as dedicating many hours to volunteering for many causes, donating land for parks and playgrounds, and providing important social outlets for women at a time when intellectual pursuits were limited. Connell Barker was also active in the Congregational Church, the Colorado Chautauqua Association, and the Temperance Movement. In the early 20th century, the Central Colorado Power Company wanted to purchase her ranch near Nederland in order to build a hydroelectric dam to supply electricity to mining camps and the city of Denver. Connell Barker refused to sell, and she disliked the idea of the dam and reservoir. Eventually, her ranch was taken by eminent domain. The dam and reservoir were completed in 1910, and they bear her name. Ironic, considering she did not want to give up her land, nor did she want the dam or reservoir. Today, the Barker Meadow Reservoir is the main water supply for the city of Boulder. It provides a beautiful backdrop to the town of Nederland, where one can hike, picnic, and birdwatch in the shadow of the spectacular Rocky Mountains. Hannah lived until her death at 800 Arapahoe Avenue, one of the oldest homes in Boulder. Hannah Connell Barker died in 1918 during the Spanish flu pandemic. She left her home to her lifelong friend, Mary Davidson, who had lived with Hannah for several years. Although owned now by a private party, the Barker House is registered as an individual historic landmark. I hope you have enjoyed these stories of women, three Coloradan women, three histories, three extraordinary lives, and all connected in some way to our own backyard. Listen next week for the tales of another three astonishing women in celebration of Women's History Month. Until the next tale from the mountains. Listen in next time to the Mountain Ear Podcast for another mountain tale. I'm Marianne Rosen. Thank you for listening.
And that's it for our show. Subscribe online to get access to more news, weekly updates to our community calendar, and a link to our YouTube channel by visiting themountaineer.com. Be sure to use the coupon code PODCAST when subscribing for a 10% discount, only available to our listeners. I'm Dango Rose. Thank you for listening.